I've got Glenn Martin and Harrison Martin, and they had the jetpack. What inspired you guys to build something like this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose like most 5-year-old boys, I loved the idea of having a jetpack when I was a child. I mean, I'm a child of the space age. I was born in 59. The first headline I ever read in the newspaper was "Go, go, go," and Glenn went. When John Glenn went into space, followed the space program. Obviously, most of my generation are great fans of aviation. And believed, like a lot of people, that we would be having our nuclear-powered airliners and our colonies on Mars. And
we don't have those things yet?
No. Oh. That's so unfortunate.
Oh, rats. I hate when that happens.
I couldn't do anything about the colonies on Mars, but when I was 21, I was at university, and I thought about it again and thought, you know, I wouldn't mind researching and just finding out why. Why aren't we flying around in jetpacks? And this was before the internet, so the only way to do research was to use a university library system. And I found out that, the hydrogen peroxide Bell rocket belts could fly for 26 seconds. You needed to weigh less than 160 pounds, and I weigh 220 pounds, so that was never going to work for me. So I decided to do something about it.
Are you going to be able to fly this thing again at Air Venture?
Well, we originally planned on flying here once at Aeroshell Square, and I know there's been a lot of people were disappointed on 9:30 on Tuesday morning because the crowd was so big. We've had people come up to us and say, I was way at the back of the crowd and I could barely see anything. Please, could you fly again? And we've been working through whether we can do that, talking to our insurance people, looking at the team. And today I'm unfortunately going to announce that we're not going to fly again. I think the team's too tired. And given all the we've been working very hard through the nights with all the getting the approvals, and I think it actually would be foolhardy to do it. Yeah. Come down to our booth at S5053, and we can show you some video of us flying back in New Zealand, which is a lot more than what we did in Aeroshell Square. And really, we'll have to wait until we come back. I mean, I've been well aware, and I've had a lot of test pilots come up to us in the last few days, put their arm around me and say, be conservative. Air shows, that's when things go wrong.
And, oh, absolutely,
And I've taken that advice on board, and I think we have to follow that.
The FAA. Now, You're saying that this is Part 103 legal.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's been from the ground up, it's been designed to be Part 103 legal. You know, it's got a 5-gallon tank, it weighs less than 254 pounds, it's single pilot, VFR, VNE of 63 mile an hour. I can't remember what the stall speed limit is on ultralights, because obviously we don't have a stall speed, so that doesn't sort of...
That doesn't necessarily apply.
Yep.
The FAA, they obviously have given this thing what we Americans call the hairy eyeball. They've really looked it over.
Yeah, I mean, with the EAA and Earl Lawrence has been helping us with that. And from a Kiwi perspective, it's a bit, most other countries are a lot more regulated than your country. And when I talked to a guy from the FAA, I said, I've developed this thing and it meets the ultralight rules. You know, do I need to come and get it certified? And they said, well, you know, it's... if it meets the ultralight rules, it doesn't need to be certified. And as a Kiwi, do we need to get it certified that it doesn't need to be certified? And he, like you, laughed and said, what are you talking about? So it's a little bit difficult for us Kiwis. We almost want a certificate to say that it doesn't need to be certificated, you know.
Well, that's okay, because trust me, you're better off staying away from all the certificated stuff, because lawyers and stuff, they pounce on that kind of thing.
Yeah, so, you know, Earl's been working through all that for us, and he's obviously talked to the FAA, and at home our civil aviation, who talks to the FAA, have done all that for us. So they've been actually very good.
You know, you guys have really lit my cookies with this thing. I got to come over and check this thing out.
Do.
I've got a million and one things to do, but I'm going to move that jetpack up higher on the list of priorities, because I have to admit that the ability to hang in midair 3 feet off the ground has always fascinated me.
Yeah, well, it's very hard to describe, and it is a very unique feeling. And so far, everybody who's been in it, and there's only been like 14 people been in it worldwide, they've all walked out with a huge grin on their face. I'm sure some of you have seen the videos on CNN and such. When we got Miles O'Brien in the aircraft and a young lady from the Today Show, we got her in the aircraft. We hold them down, but that allows them to get off the ground and get that feeling of leaving and floating and turning around. And universally, people come out with a huge grin on their face. So.
Are you looking for test pilot number 15 by any chance? I'd like to volunteer for that slot.
We have a long list of people who obviously want to do that.
Oh,
Eddie.
Rats. You know, I'm always late for that kind of thing. This thing, undoubtedly, you're getting a lot of press from this. I mean, the New York Times covered it, CNN.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't you know, turn the TV on without bumping into this
thing.
That's
been a totally unexpected and has overwhelmed us a little bit. And we're from New Zealand. We don't get the New York Times. Everybody is walking around here going, wow, you got the cover of New York Times. When was the last time a technology or an aircraft or the EAA got on the front cover of New York Times?
I don't think it's ever happened.
That's
not
right.
EAA
and,
anyway.
Yeah, we don't. I think coming from New Zealand, we don't quite understand really what the impact has been. I think it's going to take us weeks to get our head around that.
Well, you've been working on this thing for a number of years, and there's always the bean counters, the accountants.
Yeah, sure.
How much money have you put into this thing?
Fortunately, Eddie, I don't know.
You'd probably have all your hair fall out
if I knew. You know, the thing started off literally as me in my garage at home working nights and weekends, and then, you know, I've got the best wife on the planet. She not only was the first person to step into the thing and fire it up, but she went out and worked during the day so I could be an unemployed bum at home working on my jetpack and looking after the kids. And then eventually, you know, we had a whole lot range of engineers who came and worked with us who became lifelong friends. They've invested in it. And then we've got a VC company, a venture capital company out of New Zealand called Number 8 Ventures who came on board about 3 years ago. And they've been helping fund it. You know, obviously funding, I heard your interview with the Adams aircraft company guys, and, you know, funding's always an issue for any new startup and any new company. So that's, again, another good reason to get here to say, look, we're here. You know, we want to create this whole new space in aviation, drag some new people in. I think the Young Eagles people are excited about the opportunities, the number of children and 10-year-olds that have been coming up and wanting their photograph in the jetpack and saying, Dad, I'm going to get one of these when I'm, you know, a bit older. So I think it's a great opportunity for not only for us, but I think for aviation and youth.
Well, you know, once again, everybody dreams of flying with a jetpack on their back.
It's here now, Eddie. It's here now.
It's a universal
booth
dream.
S53. You can sign up for one now.
Oh, you guys are taking deposits?
Absolutely.
That's right. I did read that.
Yeah. So you know, we're doing the standard thing that a lot of companies are doing here. They're $100,000 that we're taking a 10% deposit, which goes into an escrow account and California, I believe. There's our accountant and lawyer over there is holding all that for us, and the same model that everybody else who, you know, sells aircraft. And we're doing that for a couple of reasons. No one's ever really tried to sell a jetpack before. We need to know, you know, what volume are we going to need to manufacture for, and we're starting that process now. And so far, it's gone a little bit better than we expected.
Well, I'm sure that this is not the final version of the jetpack. I'm sure guys realize that, hey, you know, maybe we can improve it by doing this, and that.
Absolutely. I mean, as I say, we're about 1904, 1905, where the Wright brothers were. This is literally our new baby, and we have a plan going forward for development. We know where we're going to be going over the next 2 or 3 years, and we know there's going to be dramatic improvements in the product over the next 2 or 3 years. But I can't see an end to this. I can't see it just stopping.
No, it's definitely going to get better and better. Well, I'm a motorhead at heart. You know, if there's an engine in it, I'm there. And the one question that I have is, where did you get the engine for this?
I'm surprised to tell you, but you know, we had to build our own. We had been building these for 27 years. I've been working on it. I've always just grabbed an old motorbike engine or a snowmobile engine and put in my prototypes. And then about 2 years ago, we were very fortunate that a guy by the name of Dr. Joseph Teverwerk, who used to be the reliability guy at Mercury Marine just down the road here at Fond du Lac, came to New Zealand, and we managed to get hold of him. And we looked at the engine we were using, and he shook his head and said, that's not going to cut it, you know. So I came back to Wisconsin 2 years ago, and we sat down with a team of engineers, and we said, look, we want something that's reliable. Obviously, you're putting it on your back, you know, it has to be aviation standard. What can we do? And in the end, we decided if we wanted the ideal engine for a jetpack, we actually had to design our own. So we've designed our own engine and built it. I think if any engine guy comes and looks at it, it's got very conservative numbers in it. You know, the mean piston speeds and the power densities and all those sort of things that you have to make a reliable engine is, you know, right on board there. So we've designed that for about 1,000 hours TBO.
That's not bad. Yeah. And, of course, being that it is a four-cylinder two-stroke, it should be relatively easy to overhaul.
Yeah, well, we literally can, you know, swap a barrel and a piston and well, I can't, but one of my engineers can do it in 20 minutes. It would take me probably more like an hour. So it's a pretty simple engine, and basically that comes down to, you know, simple is reliable.
That's right.
And it's so far it's proven to be very, very reliable. We've, you know, carried them around the world and assembled them, and we fired it up in Fond du Lac, you know, pressed the start button. It had a different fuel in it, a different oil here in the US, and it fired up in less than a second and sat there idling very nicely. So, yeah, it's been good.
That's good. I was going to say, with a project like this, you want the engine to be as reliable as a box of rocks.
And it is. It's, you know, the two-stroke gurus who are into you know, ATVs and dirt bikes and that look at our engine and say, no, you could get twice the horsepower out of that. But the aviation guys sort of, you know, nod and go, yeah, well, that's very conservatively designed. That's what you need to do.
You're listening to me. I'm Fast Eddie on EAA Radio.